Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, it's nice to be back. As you know, I was at home taking care of my Aunt Catherine. I prepared her for 10 days before she made her transition, and she had a wonderful transition with people around her and was comfortable and clean and well taken care of. And I also did her memorial service. And I found I had known that this existed because she had shown it to me. And it's in her handwriting, and it says, "Have only graveside service, or none at all. Just have someone read, but not today." And she has it dated 11/13/95. Mm-hmm. "So I will read, but not today to you." You two heard it on Monday. "I will grow old, perhaps, but not today. Not while my hopes are young and my spirit strong. My vision clear, because life has a way of smoothing out the wrinkles with a song. I will grow old, perhaps, but not today. Not when my dreams remain a shining shield, my faith a lance, and beneath the sky of gray, my colors wave upon the battlefield. I will grow old, perhaps, but not today. Not while this pen can write upon a page, and memories turn a winter into May. Shall this stout heart be brought to terms by age? I will grow old, perhaps, but not today. And scorning time, who would enlist my tears? I stand convinced there is a better way of occupying all the coming years. I will grow old, perhaps, but not today. In my own style and in my own sweet time. No night so dark there does not fall a ray of light along the narrow trail I climb. Oh, say of me when my last hours slip, like one bright leaf to softly rest upon the others, life was honey on the lips of one who died, believing she was young." And that's exactly what she did. She stayed young at 95. Never complained about her age or anything, you know. Now, when I remember sometimes she would say, "Well, when was the last time a 90-year-old cooked dinner for you?" So, yeah. She had a great sense of humor right up to the end. So, as I talked on Monday night, if anyone is afraid of death, please give that up, because it's a wonderful experience, and it's a wonderful experience to be with someone when they're making that transition. Our society has taken death out of the home and it's taken death out of our lives completely. And death is a natural process that's going to happen to us all. Yes, we all want to live, and we can live as long as we like. But at one point, we have to make a transition into a different life. And that's all it is a transition. So don't be afraid of death, and don't be afraid of somebody who's dying. I know a lot of people couldn't look at her when they came to the house. They didn't want to see her, and they didn't want, you know, they would come to visit, but they didn't want to look in on her and things like that. Or they said, "I just can't do that type of thing," you know, and all that. And there was absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So remember those things and do that. We took death out of the home years ago when we started with funeral parlors and so forth, when they decided we'd bury people. And the family now no longer cares for the body or anything. They just say, "Oh, it's dead," and they ship it right out of the house without anything. So you can learn a lot from that process. And you know that we're all going to do it. So that's the thing. The little paper that I handed out this evening. You handed that one.
Yes, good. Good to be here.
As I said earlier, Tom Talbert was a friend of mine, and he was the first person that I did practitioner work for. He was a principal of a high school in Atlanta, Georgia. And he wanted to change jobs, and he wanted to have a job in New Orleans, and he wanted to be a principal. And he came to me for treatment, and we treated, and we did all the necessary things, and no job came about. And he said, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, Dallas. He said, I've done everything. What can I do? I said, have you packed? He said, what do you mean? I said, have you packed? He said, well, no, I haven't packed. I haven't gotten the job. I said, you must go home and put things in a box and mark them New Orleans and show the universe that this is what you want, that this is how you impress the universe. And you're making that. But you always have to have a movement in mind. That's the idea of treating and moving your feet. You must do something. You come to a practitioner or you do your own treatment work, but then you have to do something to back that up. So as soon as he started to pack, didn't they call and say, and it was six weeks, I think, into the school year, and he was sure he wasn't going to get it. Well, they called and they said, we have a job that is for a third grade teacher or something. Would you be interested in taking it? So he called me and he said, well, I'm not getting the job I want. I said, yes, you are. I said, take that job. You wanted to go to New Orleans? That will lead to something. He was there 6 months, and the principal quit there, and they hired him as the principal of the high school. Now, this is the way things work. When we say, oh, I'm not getting what I want, or this isn't happening, or that isn't happening, something is always happening, and sometimes it takes taking that job to get where you want to go. But many people say, and I hear this all the time, well, they're not offering me enough money, I can't take that job. Take the job. How much money are you making now? Well, I'm not making anything. Well, then isn't that better? Well, I'm worth more than that. Yes, you are. But this is, you start with this, and then you get to where you want to go. And sure enough, it always works that way, you see. But people think that they're going to immediately manifest the very exact thing that they want. That is absolutely possible. But remember, all the little wheels have to turn for you to be able to get what you actually want. Because it's always for the very best of all those concerned. And that's taking in everything. So you get what you want, but the wheels have to turn, and these wheels turned. He got to New Orleans, he got the teacher's job, and he got then the principal's job. So he sent me this. It's not dated, darn it. But anyway, the things that are outlined is everything that he had outlined these, by the way. This is the God-given ability to reject what they do not want in life. You have to reject what you do not want. Most people just say, this is my lot in life. And they never reject what they don't want. They say, because they've done that all their lives, or they've seen their parents doing it, or they've seen other people do it. So they say, oh, well, that's the way life is. I have to take this. How many times have somebody told you, well, you take that job, it's not the one you want, but you have to have the money. So you take things that you don't want. You have to learn that you can reject what you don't want. It works every time. Once you have to make up your mind what you're worth, you see, you have to know that you're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. And you reject all the other things. And that rejection comes in your mind. You have to reject what your mind is throwing up to you. This is all you're worth. No, I am worth much more. You see, you're more than your mind, and you're worth more than your mind is telling you. But people are always convinced that what their mind is telling them is true, and your mind is never going to tell you the truth. It has never been your friend. It will never be your friend. It has never brought you any good news, and it will never bring you any good news. So you stop listening to your mind and listen to that other voice that's inside of you. And know that you're a wonderful, wonderful human being, and that you are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. And go to that part of you. And don't listen to that mind. We must become aware of the limitation that limitations have no place in the mind of God. Limitations. There are no such things as limitation in the mind of God. There are only possibilities. Earlier you said you realized that the economy and the market has nothing to do with you whatsoever. It's not in your mind. If it's in your mind, then it has something to do with you. All that stuff that's going on out there doesn't have to phase you in the least, you say. But we buy into all that stuff. Let's go. We cannot believe in illness and health at the same time. Neither can we accept ideas of lack and limitation along with concepts of prosperity. The thought of negation must be released in order to heal the condition, whether it is a matter of health or finances or human relationships. People, the class here is called prosperity and abundance, including money. So, you must think of that all the time, prosperity, abundance, and money. And that there is no lack or limitation in the world, that you have a sufficiency, and that sufficiency is always enough or more than you need. But we buy into the world because we hear people all the time talk about lack. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't. That is separating your mind and your thought. Remember, a house divided against itself cannot stand. So you have to, when those thoughts come into your mind, you must get rid of those and go back to the idea of abundant universe, a prosperous universe, and that money is always freely circulating in your life. And that this thing that we call God is supporting you and is always guiding you in the right direction. You cannot have two things going at once. You cannot say, I'm in perfect health and believe in illness. It will not work, you see. You have to constantly say, I am in perfect health. But every cell in my body knows only health, and I am healing myself right here and right now. You cannot have two things going on at the same time in your mind. And don't you believe it. Start thinking health, harmony, plenty, and joy. Start thinking health, harmony, plenty, and joy. When I was in that Baptist church, I'll never forget the one thing that I learned there. They had a sign up on the way out of the back stairs, in fact. No, it's not the back. And it said, perfect peace. Perfect peace to he whose mind is stayed on thee. So if you keep your mind on God, if you keep your mind on plenty, on harmony, on this, it works. Remember Aunt Catherine, 95 years old. No, she was not a metaphysician. But she learned this because this is innate within all of us. When I asked her, how do you do it, Aunt Catherine? She said to me, I control my thinking. She knew how to control her thinking. And that is what this whole teaching is about, controlling your thinking. So, and what is controlling your thinking? You must think good thoughts about yourself. Don't let your mind beat you up all the time. Most people just allow their minds to just keep beating them up. And your mind not only will beat you up, it will give you all the reasons why it's beating you up, and you will believe those reasons. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to yourself. Earlier, Reva and I were talking, and she had a challenge this week, and I said to her, when I was at the Knoxville Church Religious Science, I used my consciousness, I used everything I could, and I could not build that church. And I realized that I had to leave that church. And I was very down on myself because I thought, what have I done wrong? And I was watching a Star Trek program. Mm-hmm. And remember Data, he was the robot who could do everything and never made a mistake. Well, he played this one game and he didn't win. And he was so upset with himself. He said, this cannot be. And the captain said to him, you must remember, sometimes you can do everything right and still not win. And still not win. And this is absolutely true. You can do everything right. But that wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right place. And I wasn't in my right place. So when you're out there in life, you have to affirm to yourself, I'm always in my right place, doing my right thing, saying the right thing. You have to do that. And then it keeps working for you. And sometimes we have to move on. We're not supposed to be in that position. We move on. That's all. But don't let your mind beat you up on those things. All right. How about let God do the rest? Too many people keep picking at their prayers, trying to tell God how something should come about, or wondering if he actually can accomplish the job. Remember, Fun and Entertainment, Ways and Means Committee. words. They don't try to tell God how to do it. You cannot, your mind, I don't care if you're Einstein or who you are, your mind is not big enough, smart enough, and intelligent enough to outthink God. You just can't do it, and God knows how to do something. And that's why we say God does things in strange and mysterious ways, because it'll come and you'll think, well, I never gave that a thought. How could that ever have happened that way? And it will happen that way. That's the wonderful thing about this. So you have to remember that too. And that this thing we call God is working for you. God has to be working for you. Does anyone know why God has to be working for you? Because it's all one, but God is in, as, and through you. The only way God can work is in, as, and through you. We're all part of God, you see. And that's why God is working for you. There's nothing working against you at all. The only thing that's ever working against you is your thinking. Is your thinking. So we have to change that mental thought process all the time. And sometimes it's so convincing, remember? It's just so convincing. But we can learn to change it. Every day I get up now and I say to myself, I control my thinking. I control my thinking. And if I have to repeat that hourly, I repeat it hourly when I thought, I control my thinking. I was coming out here tonight and something that happened in college came into my mind. And I said, no, thank you. I control my thinking. We don't need this coming up. That's 30-some years ago. Why do, you know? And you just stop that instead of letting it go on. Most of the things we think about, we know the end result because we thought of it 100 other times, haven't we?
Right.
Just an absolute waste of time. So control your thinking. Make it stop doing that. You know, that would be like watching the same television program over and over and over and over and over. It gets a little boring, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it gets very old, so you have to get rid of it. And you cannot change anything that's happened to you. What you can change is the impact it had on you. And you can start by forgiving yourself and by forgiving everyone around you that brought that situation to you. That's all we can do with our past. And when you are able to release it and to forgive, then you're set free to do the things that you were put here to do. If you're constantly trying to fix the past, you don't have much time to do anything in the present, and you certainly can't plan a future because you're always digging up the dead. Remember in the Bible it says, let the dead bury the dead. That means they're dead. That's dead. That situation's dead. Let it alone. Don't do it. Okay. Is there any lack of good in life? Do not believe it. Instead, accept God's gift of every good thing. Let his riches of health and abundance, harmony, freedom, and joy flow into your life now. You have to do that, and you have to affirm that, and you have to see that every day. And when your mind tells you that those things aren't present, you have to convince yourself that they are present, and you have to see it. Because we can certainly see all the bad things in life. And that's what we're getting from the world, all the bad things. I was home the other day healing myself, and I thought, well, I'll turn on the television. Well, I had to turn that off because it's nothing, but it's nothing but bad news. They didn't tell it, well, you know, it's nothing but bad news. So that's why we think that the world is rotten and going to hell in a handbasket. And it's not rotten and it's not going to hell in a handbasket. But we have to change that by not believing it. We have to change this dream that we're all in. You know, it's a collective dream. We talk about collective consciousnesses. It's a collective dream. We're all dreaming this world. And when we learn to stop dreaming in this direction, we can change the dream, and then we can live in that dream. But it's so automatic, and we're so conditioned to it, and we've been dreaming the same dream for so long that we think it's real. So we think that the life we're leading is real, and it's not, and we can change it. It is a dream, you're saying. It is a dream. So try to remember that, to remember the old saying of Maya, man dreaming, am I? I'm a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming? I'm a man. Mm-hmm. You have to know what you're dreaming. So if you want your life to change, change your thinking and change your dreams. And at nighttime, learn to dream lucidly. At night, tell yourself what you want to dream. If you want to dream your future, if you want to do your one-man show, start dreaming about that one-man show and see yourself doing that and implant that in your dream. Dreams always come true, by the way, and they always give a message. So, use your dreams, and that's a wonderful other tool that you have. What is a dream? It's part of your imagination. And your imagination will get you everywhere. But with all of this, the one thing to remember is you are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. With that, let's do the matter. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. I matter, I matter, I really, really matter. Yay!
Woohoo!
You know, talking about this matter dance, and we started that because of the one lady that came here. It dawned on me to do this. And recently, Michelle Delane.
Michelle.
Yeah.
The horses?
Yeah, the horse girl.
Mm-hmm.
Sent me something. Somebody's doing what's called a gratitude dance. Mm-hmm. And it's on, and they're, it's a little funny dance that they do for gratitude. Yeah, something. Did you see it? It's called a gratitude.
No, there's another one at the Palm Springs Church that some guy does.
But so I did, you know. So. Mm-hmm. While I'm saying here is, you see how mind works? You know, we think, oh, this is, I thought this up, and this is the only thing. But others, see, it goes around. It just, mm-hmm. once it's in mind, it just keeps going.
Because we're not only receivers, we're also transmitters.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a two-way street. And what does that remind you of? A whole idea. Giving and receiving, giving and receiving, giving and receiving.
The flow.
And we're not taught that, right? It's more blessed to give than to receive. You cannot give without receiving. And it's always going to keep circulating that way. That's the way the whole thing works. Now, I want to talk a moment about my visit to the land of Nod. And I call it the land of Nod because those people nod off most of the time. My brother has a grandson, 8 years old. Precious little boy. Very big for his age, I think. But he came home from school at 3:00 and he goes to the grandmother's house, my sister-in-law. And she said to me, would you watch him, Dallas? I have to go to the bank. I said, sure, I'll watch him. And she says to him, you may not go to the park. Well, the park is just next door. Just, you know, he could look out the window and see the park. Well, he fell into a horrible mood immediately. And he was getting angry and he was getting on. I tried to talk him out of it by saying, well, let's play. Let's do this. What did you do at school? Oh, no. Nothing. You see, remember, Emmett Fox said, if there's one thing you can teach children, teach them that they live in a mental world. Mm. He does not know that he lives in a mental world, and he is not going to know that from them. Because then she came home, and she said, oh, are you mad at me? Did I make you angry? Did I do this? I said, Patsy, you didn't do anything. He's the one that's choosing to act that way. Of course, they don't get any of that, you see. But if he realized that he could change his mind and it had nothing to do with her or the park, it had to do with what he was thinking, what a wonderful thing that would be. Now, he's supposed to be very smart in school. He's a very good artist already. He does these wonderful little drawings, pencil drawings that are so specific, so detailed. So you know he has a good mind. So if they could teach him that, but they're not going to in that neighborhood. You see, when you live in the land of Nod, you're not going to know those things. Mm-hmm. And there's no one around to teach him. Now, I may start sending him little blurbs here and there of things. I did that with Jack's children. Fortunately, I did not succeed. I always sent them things telling them how unique and different they were and so forth, and to love themselves, you know. But it didn't work because there are not enough people telling them that, you see. And children need to hear that. If children knew what? That they were worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that they matter.
Yeah.
Do you think we would have all these school killings?
No. No.
We wouldn't have all these school killings. No. But they're never going to look into that part of it. They're never going to look into that part of it. And this is why we say we live in a mental world. It's what's going on inside of your mind. It's what you are thinking about yourself that counts, not what anybody else thinks about you. It was Terry Cole Whittaker, I think they said, what somebody thinks about me is none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and we're always concerned what the neighbors are thinking or what somebody else is thinking. No, learn to think what you're thinking about yourself and learn to think the right thoughts about yourself. We have to raise ourselves now. We are the ones who have to tell ourselves that we are good human beings, that we're wonderful people. You say, we have to do that because it's not good. No one else is going to do that. When I was at home, I read Charlie Brown. And it was Lucy and Charlie said, well, if I could just get somebody to love me, my life would be perfect. And Lucy said, is that all you need? He said, yes, all I need is somebody to love me. She said, are you sure that's all you need? He said, yes. That's all I need for somebody to tell me they love me. She looked at him and said, I don't think I can do it, and walked away. I don't think I can do it. So many people, that's what they're waiting for. You have to start to love yourself. Don't wait for somebody else to love you, validate you, give you a compliment, or say anything. How many times, maybe you did, when you were a child or something, had something, bring a new one, and were so proud of yourself, and no one said a word.
Mm-hmm.
And you were waiting for a compliment to say, oh, geez, you look nice, or geez, I like it, and no one said a word. You have to do it for yourself. You have to say, geez, I look nice, thank you. You have to do it for yourself. It's not that they're not doing that, and may not even be jealous or anything. People don't notice things. Everyone... it's in their own mind thinking things about their own self. They're very busy in there, you know. You know. They don't have time to think about you, you know. And we think, oh, they're thinking this about me or that about me. They're not thinking a damn thing about you. They're too busy thinking about other things. So just forget that one, you know.
Yeah.
they're just tied up with their own self, which is fine, which is absolutely fine. But know that. And don't do that. I've seen many relationships go down the tubes because the other person's waiting for the other person to say they love them, you know. And they may never be able to say that. But what they do, they show you that. They do different things. You have to do that for yourself. You know, that's a... I see also so many relationships fall apart, and I know they're going to fall apart as soon as somebody says to me, well, now it's time to take this to the next level. What the hell that means, I have no idea, ever, that everyone wants to take something to the next level. And I think, well, that relationship's down the tubes right now because the other person may not know what the next level is, may not want to go to the next level, and you're saying, well, unless we go to the next level, it's over. Well, it's usually over. Have you ever noticed that when they say make those horrible statements? So you have to do that for yourself. You have to go to the next level yourself. Because you went to the next level doesn't mean the other person has to follow you, has to go with you. Everyone has to be their own selves. And when you're in a loving, caring, sharing relationship, you have to be free to be who you are. You have to let the other person be free to be who they are. And you each encourage the other person to become the very best person they know how to become. And because you may think they have to be something else, no. You encourage people to be their very best. And we always give somebody that opportunity to be their very best. That's all life is about. It's not going to all these different levels and so forth. I never understood that. In relationships or in the world itself, well, people say, oh, well, you're only at level one. What? How many levels are there? You know? Why can't it all be done at once? You know, well, you have 10 more levels to go. I thought, oh, I don't think so, thank you. You know, what is this? You can have it all at once. You don't have to do that to yourself. So, mental world, choices, knowing that you can control your thinking. And we have to be able to control our thinking so that we don't go down the tubes, so that we don't punish ourselves, you're saying. Remember, I often say to you, God never sits in judgment upon itself through you. And when you start to judge yourself and put yourself down, who are you putting down?
God.
God. You are saying, you didn't make me right. You made a mistake. You did this and that.
You made junk.
You made junk. And God does not make junk. Your mind makes junk. So you have to remember that. And it's that a whole idea. Once you understand that you are not your mind, your mind is yours, yours to use. And there's a part of you that knows how to use your mind. Start using your mind and don't allow your mind to use you. And that's what's going on out there in the world. Everyone is allowing their mind to run their life for them. Most people have no idea who's running their life. They think they're running their life, but they're not running their life at all. Past events are running their life. Their parents are still running their life, whether they're on this plane of action or not. But there's always somebody else running their lives for them, and they think they're living. And I call that an imitation of life. We are individualized expressions of God, and we must know that. And yes, we can say, ah, I may look like my father, or I may have this or that habit or something from my father, but you are not your father. You are not your mother. You are you, and you have a unique way of expressing yourself, and you have to learn to express yourself your way, not somebody else's way. And we allow this world to mold us into things that we are not, you know. Look how many people, a new fad comes out and everyone wants to wear the same look-alike stuff. When I used to do a lot of shopping when I used to dress, so when I walked in the store, as soon as the clerk would say to me, oh, everyone's buying this, I said, well, then don't show it to me. I don't want to look like everybody else. We have to learn that we are individualized expression of this thing we call God. And we're individualized expression of the mind of God. So we think differently than other people. And we approach situations differently. We approach problems differently. Our educational system, when it was set up, immediately said everyone learns the same. And now they know that that's not true. Some people learn through words. Some people learn through vision. There are all kinds of ways to learn. We don't all learn the same way. And that's what we have to learn about ourselves. This is what makes us unique. But the world, when you get a group of people together, the best way to teach anything or to do anything is to make them all the same. This is the way I'm going to teach you. You may get that in real estate. Don't everyone in real estate do it differently?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. You have to learn to do it your way. Instead of, it's nice to do all those seminars. It's nice to have all that knowledge, but then you have to take that and do it your way, or it's not going to work. How many times has somebody called you on the phone and you know damn well it's a canned speech going on? Do you want to listen to that and buy something? I hang right up. Now, if it's somebody telling me something from their heart, from who they are, then I will listen. Well, I don't want, you know, I can read. Why don't you just send me the script? I'll read it. You know, you don't need that. You don't need that type of thing. So remember that we are individualized expressions of this thing that we call God. And we have to start using that. And that we can use the mind of God to bring into our lives what we want. But we have to get rid of all the negativity that we have inside of our own thinking. We have to start seeing the world the way we want it to be, not the way it is. And you have to start seeing yourself the way you want to be, not the way you are now. If you're completely pleased with yourself the way you are now, then stay that way. But if you want something in life, something different in life, then start seeing yourself the way you want to be and start behaving in that direction. When you do that, the universe comes and backs you up in that. The same way when I told Tom, start packing for New Orleans, even though you don't have the job. Soon as he started to pack some boxes and wrote New Orleans on them, he gets a telephone call. As soon as you decide, I don't like the life I'm leading, I want this life, and you start acting like that, and you have that life that comes to you, and all the opportunities, all the things that you need come to you. But it doesn't come to you while you're thinking the old thoughts and being your old self. The whole idea in life is to change, and to change your mind. In religious science, what do we say? Change your mind, change your life. But what does that mean? Well, it means change your mind about yourself. Everyone thinks it means change your mind about this stuff. It means change your mind about yourself. It means know that you're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. And then change your mind about God, that God is an old man up in the sky handing down thunderbolts or whatever, that you are part of that thing called God. And that thing called God is always there to help you. That's how you change your life, by changing your mind. You can take metaphysical classes up one side and down the other, but if you still think there's a heaven and a hell, you haven't learned a damn thing. You might as well give it up. Just throw it in. Because that's separation. And if you have separation in any of your thinking, you can't manifest anything. Everything is unity. It's bringing things together. You have to have unity in your life. And unity with your thinking. You see, you can't say, I am born to be rich, and that money is always freely circulating in my life, and I always have it at the time surplus, and then say to somebody, you know, I'm broke. You know, I don't have any money. You know, money's scarce. All that may be true, but it's only facts, and you can never live in facts. You have to live in the truth, and the truth is always, money is freely circulating in my life, and there's always a divine surplus, that there's always plenty of money for everybody. And you must keep that in your mind. Don't look at the facts, or at least don't believe them. But you see, as soon as we get a fact, we say, oh, well, that's a fact. How many people in your real estate, besides the lady in your office there, who say, oh, well, you know, it's going down the tubes. I was in Washington. All they talked about in Washington, prices are really bad. Boy, everything's tanking. Everything's going down. This is happening. That's happening. I just listen to all these people. I think, what facts are you living in? Don't live in that fact. If you live in the fact, you become the fact.
Yeah.
Live in the truth, and you'll become the truth. And let all this, you've lived long enough, we've all lived long enough to have seen all the ups and downs, to have seen all the ups and downs. And have we not always come through every one of those things?
Yep.
We've all come through it. So what's going on out there is manufactured. All that stuff is manufactured that's going on out there. There's nothing real about it. Somebody decided, now we're going to start with the real estate. One person started that. Other people jumped on the bandwagon. And before you know it, they have this whole thing that the market's going downhill. It's all manufactured. You have to know that. So the point here is, don't manufacture those stories in your mind about yourself. You're just manufacturing something that's not true. They're all facts that are not true. It may be a fact right now that you're out of work, that you're unemployed. But that's only a fact. You have to go back to knowing that money is always freely circulating in your life, and you always have a divine surplus, and that you can get a job anytime you want. Why can you get a job anytime you want?
Because it's out there.
Because you're worthy, deserving, totally level once you matter. Worthy, deserving, totally level one that you matter. Once you know those four items, you can walk in any place and say, I'm here for a job. And they will give you a job. They will give you a job. I learned a very good thing from my mother. My mother said to me once, people who can't find a job means they do not want to work. If you want to work, you can find a job. And this is absolutely true. I had clients years ago that they used to send me from the Staying Alive thing, Shanti. And the young man was on assistance or so forth. And he said, I just can't find work. I just can't find work. I said, that's an impossibility. I said, I can go right. I was living on Laurel then in West Hollywood. I said, walk down the block. You can find at least 4 to 5 help wanted signs in the windows. So I never saw them. Of course he never saw them, because he didn't want to go to work. He wasn't going to work. Don't you still see? I see help wanted signs in the windows all over the place. And people say, oh, no one's hiring. I thought, no one's hiring. They must be hiring me when you have those signs in the window. You see? So it's all manufactured. It's what you're thinking and what you're doing. But once you know that, and once you know that you matter, and that you're worthy and deserving and lovable, you can get a job. You can get a job. And it doesn't matter what job you have. So many people say, oh, I couldn't do that. That's beneath me. There's no job beneath anybody. There's no job beneath anybody. You see, that's what the world wants to tell you. You know, learn to work. Learn to do things. I scrubbed many bathrooms and did many things to keep going. Never bothered me in the least. Never bothered me in the least. I never thought I was above any of that stuff. So, if you want to work, you can work. But know that you are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. These are the things that will work across the board. Across the board. You work with people who don't know that, and you find out what happens to you. See. You work probably with people who don't know that, and you see what happens to them. So, these are the things that are going to make a difference in your life. And they should be taught. And with that nephew of mine, that little 8-year-old, if he had this now, instead of dragging him to that church where they make you stand up and say, even though I am unworthy, whatever, it's not good for an 8-year-old kid. Years ago, a family came to town and they sent their kids off to the first church, and happened to be a religious science church. And when they came back from church, the mother said, well, what did you learn? The little boy said, oh, we learned that we're wonderful human beings. And the mother said, well, we can't send you back to that church. Because people don't want to know that. They don't want you to know, you see. So you have to do that for yourself. That's a true story, by the way. You can't go back to that church.
Wow.
Because they're used to being told, people, lap up. Turn on some of that evangelistic stuff that's on the television when they're telling you how awful things are and how awful you are and all this, that, and the other thing. And they can fill a 6,000-seat amphitheater. Why they're, you know, I could fill this room if I started to tell you how bad you were. People would flock in here. You think we'd have lost some of the people if I had told them how bad they were? They would have loved to have heard that. But they'd have bought right into that and stayed. They would have. I know the ones that would have done it.
That doesn't take any work.
It doesn't take this any does. Work. It does not take any work.
Does.
Years ago, somebody said to me, Dallas, it's easy to hurt. Why don't you learn to heal? And that's what we're here for. We're here to heal ourselves. to heal ourselves of this mental condition that we have put ourselves into, where we allow our minds to put us down. We must heal that, and it can be healed. And it's not healed with pills, and it's not healed with psychiatry and all that stuff, because the mind cannot heal the mind, but the spirit can heal the mind. So what we are trying to do here is renew a right spirit within each one of us, and that's what life is about, learning to renew that spirit that you came here with, and to see that spirit in you and in everybody else, and to use that to make your life fulfilled and joyful and happy and abundant. And it can be done, and it's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.
Woo-hoo.
Absolutely. Really fast.
Light off.
Well.